The conflict in Ukraine, started by the illegal junta government and Nazi forces, which continue to commit horrendous crimes with impunity because they have the full backing of their paymasters across the sea, has destabilized Europe and the world as the United States continues to see its hegemony and influence decline. The unilateral and irrational attempt to isolate Russia by the U.S. and prevent Russia from being an influential power is being facilitated by NATO, which continues to make demands on its member countries which are damaging to their economies and security. In reality, with regard to the South Stream gas pipeline, it is beneficial to European countries and their economies, yet the waning hegemon from across the sea insists on attempting to divide Russia from its natural role in Europe, a continent it is the largest part of. The West is promoting cultural racism in Ukraine and has unleashed Nazis in Europe to fulfill its goals. The conflict being forced against the Russian Federation may herald in a new world order, one which will see Russia taking its proper role, which is exactly what the U.S. wishes to prevent.
VR exclusive.
Hello, this is John Robles. I'm speaking with Mr. Stevan Gajic. He's with the Institute for European Studies in Belgrade, Serbia. Hello, sir. How are you this evening?
Hello. Great.
My first question is regarding U.S. influence in Europe and in Serbia in particular, and with relation to the South Stream gas pipeline. How likely do you think Europe is going to continue following instructions by the U.S. in energy policy and other areas?
What we learned after the release of WikiLeaks and especially Edward Snowden is that the United States has its agents of influence all over the world. And the job of these people is to follow the interests of the United States, whether they work in particular countries for the government or for the non-governmental sector. So the influence of the United States on the specific state policies in particular countries is only likely to increase in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Russia and China are currently struggling for the multipolar world. We still live in Pax Americana that is falling apart. But after the tectonic changes, especially in the field of economy, after the agreement that was recently signed between Russia and China, I think that the United States are likely to be more and more nervous, and their policies influencing economies and politics in particular countries of Europe and across the world is only likely to increase.
It seems like the hegemon is desperate. They're lashing out. They're trying anything. They're doing things that really are irresponsible, I think, not to mention illegal, etc.
The United States have recognized that their power is gradually decreasing. The only logical solution from that point of view is to create chaos in order to buy more time so that there won't be other power or a cluster of powers that will fill in the vacuum of power that is currently appearing.
VR exclusive.
Recently we had the statement by Mr. Rasmussen of NATO,
mm-hmm.
who said that the Euro-Atlantic commitment is actually more important than economic interests of particular countries. And he was pressuring Germany more than any other country that is really reluctant to impose serious sanctions on Russia.
You would agree then that NATO is more interested in propagating itself than in the well-being of the citizens of the countries who are unfortunate to be members of it?
Absolutely. I mean, for the United States as the main external creator of the EU, this security umbrella was always much more important, and it still is today. So from the logic of NATO, this does make sense, because NATO is, before everything else, following the interests of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely not in Germany's interest to impose sanctions against Russia. It's not in their economic interest, even more the civil war that is going on in Ukraine today. But there are obligations that they have as a member of NATO, and we should not disregard the fact that the biggest U.S. military base in Europe is in Germany, which certainly influences their internal and foreign policy.
Right. The European countries and NATO member countries who already give 8% of their GDPs to NATO, they are now being asked to sacrifice economically, sociopolitically, culturally, in many different ways, just for the benefit of the military machine, which is NATO. And that's giving up a large percent of each country's sovereignty and ignoring the well-being of the citizens. citizens of each country?
Absolutely. The U.S., as the only modern sovereign state in the West, is providing this security umbrella. So now that the economy is not doing well, the United States is asking for EU and NATO members to sacrifice their economy in order to protect the whole umbrella. Mm-hmm. So regarding pipelines, it is in Germany's and in Serbia's and in Bulgaria's interest for the South Stream to be built. It is completely makes sense when it comes to economy. However, this would almost completely disconnect the Euro-Atlantic connection. So European Union and the countries through which the pipeline runs will economically be more and more dependent from Russia, which would benefit their economies, but it wouldn't benefit the political architecture of the Euro-Atlantic community.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a few minutes ago the Pax Americana, and you mentioned European countries giving up their sovereignty for peace. Would you agree that that peace is the Pax Americana? Because NATO is not really creating much peace for the European Union with the operations in Afghanistan. And
well, the U.S. and NATO was exporting chaos in order to keep peace in their own communities. So this system functioned for a good while, but now that other countries showed up or reappeared as powerful regional and, in perspective, global players, the system is not functioning anymore. Can you imagine the world without dollar? Not today, but
I could. I think it'd be a pretty good one after the initial collapse. I'm sorry.
Probably, but not from everybody's perspective. Mm. I mean, if the gas pipeline between Russia and China really starts working, and if the exchange, as they agreed, is going to be Russian ruble and Chinese yuan, then the dollar will lose its importance as a world
currency.
World currency.
Right.
Yeah, and this means that the standard of average American will decrease, and this automatically means social problems within the United States that are already tense.
I don't think they can get much worse. I mean, people are in a really bad situation right now as it is.
VR exclusive.
Just a reminder, you're listening to an interview with Stephen Gajic. Also, I'd like you to clarify or to expand or to give your opinion on, now you talk about security for Europe. I have to ask this big question. Against whom? First, we had the boogeyman of Iran. Now we have this evil Russian aggression, which is, Russia is not aggressing against anyone. It's not expanding. It was trying to do business.
Well, from the eyes of the American neocons and extreme liberal politicians, Russia was always a boogeyman. For the very fact it holds most of world resources. And it was openly said by Madeleine Albright a couple of years ago that it's not just for Russia to have 40% of world resources. Things are as simple as that.
But it's Russia's land. It's Russia's territory.
It is Russia's territory. But in a post-war globalized world, there shouldn't be any independent countries. There shouldn't be any sovereign states. So
if you have $5,000 in your pocket and I have $2, I should say, well, you don't have the right to have that money. You should give half of it to me.
Well, it's life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. I think that pursuit of happiness becomes the primary right in the eyes of some. I just wanted to say one thing. In 1999, the Potsdam World Order completely collapsed. Why is that? The United States supported a very small, in global sense, insignificant Albanian separatism within the sovereign country of Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. So without the permission of the UN Security Council, Yugoslavia was bombed, and subsequently part of its territory was occupied. What this means is that we had a precedent in international law. After that, Russia recognized two separatist provinces within Georgia, Abkhazia and South Ossetia. And the Western powers used exactly the same arguments that Yugoslavia used, you know, the argument of the international law. The fact is we don't have international law.
Right. I would rephrase that a little bit if I were you. I would say it was a precedent in international lawlessness, because everything that happened in Yugoslavia was factually and technically illegal. It was an aggressive invasion. They destroyed a country. But they got away with it.
The thing is, at the time when it was happening, we lived in Fukuyama's end of history. We lived in a world which was completely dominated by the United States. This thing changed, but the law, the legal mm-hmm. consequences remained. Mm-hmm. And that is the big problem. The problem, when you look at history, usually global orders were created after huge conflicts. Mm-hmm. The Westphalian Peace was created after the biggest European religious struggle in Germany. The Versailles Order was created after World War I, and the Potsdam Order was created after World War II. So far, history has taught us that the world orders are created after huge conflicts. So now we live in a vacuum of international order, and we live in a Hobbesian world where every state or cluster of states is for itself. So countries behave like, to use this analogy, like packs of animals. And there is literally a struggle for resources that is completely blunt and open. So everything is at stake. So this is the logic of war.
VR exclusive.
In logic of peace, economy is more important. But Rasmussen's statement comes from the logic of war, and it actually makes sense for him and for people sharing his opinion to say so. Because if we talk about South Stream, the construction of South Stream relies more on the outcome of Battle of Slavyansk and Mariupol and Damascus than on the Bulgarian or Serbian politician's decision. It sounds maybe strange, but it is like that. If Russia loses faith in Ukraine, I think that Russia's economic ventures such as gas pipeline as well as South Stream are under the huge question mark.
How do you see Ukraine and Syria tied into this? Again, if you could explain in more detail.
Everything is about credibility of the state. In 2013, Russia gained a lot of credibility, especially in handling the Syrian crisis. The beginning of 2014 also seemed very good for Russia, especially after the elegant reuniting with Crimea. So the stakes for Russia are huge. If it goes in Ukraine, which it already obliged itself to, and has legal permission from the Duma to do so.
I think maybe it should.
I agree with you. I think that the genocide that is going on currently in southeast of Ukraine, and not only in places where the cameras are, in Slavyansk and Mariupol and Donetsk and Lugansk, what is happening with people who are discontent in Odessa and Kharkov? We don't know. And we don't see any of those lately since the beginning of the Ukrainian army operation.
That's scary because we don't know what's happening, and I believe they've been wiped out. But
yes, to rely on the justice of international community and to think that something will change by itself is a lost cause. So Russia will either step in and protect its population, or it will lose faith in international arena, which is very bad position to be in, because I think that then not only its economic contracts are under question, but also the situation in the Middle East.
I see the end game in Ukraine not going the U.S.'s way. I don't want to help them out at all, but, I mean, they funded fundamentalist Islamic lunatics, and it backfired. Why do they keep doing the same thing again? Now it's Nazis in Ukraine.
This really is a very schizophrenic situation, because the United States is supporting groups like Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria and the Army of Levant, and this seems that it went out of control.
VR exclusive.
So the logic is that any ally is good if it is against Russia. We are now not talking about rational politics anymore. So we are talking about really irrational moves which could backfire.
Since the breakup of the Soviet Union, I would say Russia was never an enemy to the U.S. Russia has always attempted to work diplomatically and above board with the U.S., but they insist, no matter what, on making Russia the enemy, and I believe that is so they can expand their military.
It's really hard to be the friend of the United States, because the demands are only increasing. For instance, Serbia's EU integration process. As Serbia was delivering more and more, the demands were just increasing, and it came to the point of complete absurdity. The U.S. had a problem of having absolute power, and with absolute power came absolute position of dominance. Now, when it is losing it, they don't know how to really handle the situation. So their behavior in the international arena starts seeming quite irrational.
Yeah. Okay, Stephen, thank you very much. Anything big you want to finish up with?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that only Russians can save the Russians in Ukraine. This so-called anti-terrorist operation won't stop by itself, because there are foreign hands that are involved in it. I don't see that they want anything less than more escalation. If the conflict ends, it will be ended by the intervention of Moscow.
I see.
There's also another component, a cultural racism and Orientalism. People who connect themselves with Maidan and the values of Maidan, whatever they are, they like to see the southeast of Ukraine as backward, as anti-modern, and so on. And I think that this is a very, very dangerous field. You know, this is something that we've seen in almost all conflicts, but especially in non-Western hemisphere, where certain parts of society want to put themselves above others by trying to be more Western in the cultural sense. And by that, you know, this is cultural racism. That's also one of the components of the Ukrainian conflict that non-Russian speakers are not aware of.
Yeah, you're exactly. All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for calling me.
VR Exclusive.
You are listening to an interview with Stephen Gajic with the Institute of European Studies in Belgrade, Serbia. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, I wish you the best wherever you may be.